All right, just waiting for that guy to sit down. Come on. There we go. Cool, okay, I think we can start. Last one. Hello, everybody. Nice to see a few other faces than yesterday. It's good to be back. Used to be living here. I lived in Asia for a year, and now I live in Australia, but it's nice to be back in New Zealand and say hi to a couple of people. For the people who don't know me, my name is Michael Frank. I'm a cloud infrastructure consultant working for Cloud Solutions, Cloud SDK in Melbourne at the moment. Been working with Office 365 in Azure for the last 6 years. Heaps of fun, lots of stuff to talk about. But yeah, no, it's quite cool. So today we are talking about Microsoft Office 365 directory synchronization and federation options. I not so much will go into the details into the normal stuff that you do on a day-by-day basis, and I want to focus on the new stuff. So I want to focus on the things that came out over the last year. Also want to look forward and have a look at the beta of the next SDRSync and Azure AD Sync and see what's happening in there. So yeah, it should be heaps of new, interesting stuff. There are a couple of seats over here, guys, if you want to sit down. So we're going to talk about new stuff, interesting stuff. We'll talk a bit about hybrid. We're going to talk about multi-forests and multi-tenancy, if that's for interest for anybody. Also going to talk about other things that we can federate with, like Shippolet or SAML. I'm not sure if that's actually of interest in New Zealand, but it should be cool. Got a bit of an agenda here, so introduction. Hello. We then quick overview over the identity management in Office 365. So three slides, just making sure we're all on the same level. Making sure we all understand it. I'm going to just nail down a couple of terms, make sure we all understand it on the same level. Then go into the synchronization topics, so that's where we spent most of our time. Again, going to talk about Shippolet, going to talk about directory sync, going to talk about Azure AD Sync. Then go into the federation topics, so ADFS, other things, whatever you have on-prem. And then lastly, there's a slide about what will work with Office 365 Identity Program for Microsoft, which is a program that Microsoft brings out to certify other identity providers than ADFS. All right, let's get started. If you guys have any questions, feel free to ask. I think we have enough time to ask a couple to answer a couple of questions, so just raise your hand or speak up. Also, try not to make any inappropriate jokes, but I'm not sure if I can do that. All right, so let's start with the identity for Microsoft Cloud Services. So in general, there are two. There's the Microsoft account, and there is the Windows Azure Active Directory account. People sometimes confuse them. So the Microsoft account is what used to be the Live account, or what you use to now log into Outlook.com, what you use for your private OneDrive and those kind of things. When Office 365 started, we actually had the Live account as the login ID as well, so they used to be tied together. Till we swapped over to Azure AD, and then Office 365 to use Azure AD. But there's a couple of things going on in Microsoft in the background where Microsoft tries to make it more clear how you can log on to a service. So you would have seen that if you log on to the Azure portal at the moment, you can actually log in with both IDs, and it doesn't actually prompt you anymore to log in as a Live ID or log in with an organization ID. So Microsoft tries to make it more clearer how you can log on and basically enable you to log on with whatever you want to log on as. Then we have the typical slide about the Office 365 identities. So we have three identity models. We have the cloud-only. Office 365, everything is in the cloud. We don't have any servers on-prem. Everybody authenticates against Office 365. And we have everything up there. And then we have two models where we have actually on-prem servers. Model number one, where we have the DirSync server on-prem, where we have a directory on-prem that we want to move into Azure, that we want to, or into Office 365, that we want to use in Office 365. And then lastly, we have a federation scenario where next to the directory component, we also have a federation component that will enable us to federate our identities with the local directory. All pretty basic stuff. Again, we're going to mainly be in this space today and going to talk a lot about the different options that we have in terms of directory and in terms of synchronization as well as federation. One of the questions that always comes up is, how do you actually choose which model to use in your tenant? In general, it's quite easy. It's really choose the one that's the simplest for you. You can change between the different models. So you can start with a cloud only, and whenever you want, you can install DuoSync. You can then do SMTP matching, so you can actually use your identities on-prem that you have in place. You can also introduce federation if you want to, and vice versa. If you don't need it anymore, you can go backwards because maybe you found out that you actually don't need ADFS because the password sync tool does everything you need. That's cool. Yeah, so we have the three models. Choose the easiest one. What people used to do is they used to install ADFS or the federation part mainly so users can use the same password in Office 365 as on-prem. Microsoft brought out the password hash sync tool or option like a year ago, so that now means we can use the same password in Office 365 that we have on-prem without actually having to have ADFS. It gives us a similar experience to single sign-on. It's not the same experience as single sign-on, it's the same sign-on. It means that there are a couple of differences between each other, mainly in terms of how many times you get prompted for your password. So with single sign-on, you get less prompted because you can authenticate against your directory directly. And with same sign-on, you will get a few more prompts. But in the end, you can use the same password, so there's no need to actually implement ADFS only to have the same password. But there are a couple of scenarios where you actually want to use the ADFS, and they are categorized in three categories. So we have the existing infrastructure, technical requirements, and then policy requirements. So we want to use ADFS or identity federation if we already have ADFS in place, or if we have another third-party federation identity provider like Shibboleth, SAML in place that we want to use. We also want to use it if we have forefront identity manager in place, which is basically the same as the DuoSync component. Then we have some technical requirements. You have multiple forests that you want to integrate into Office 365. You have multi-factor authentication or smart cards that you're using on-prem, and you want to include that in your authentication model for Office 365. You have hybrids, or you want to give users the ability to reset the passwords if they forgot it, and that's actually a new feature of DuoSync, which I'll show you later on. And then lastly, we might have some policy requirements that say, hey, we do need to have single sign-on for some specific policy. We want to be able to disable account right when the user left. We want to be able to tell the user that they can't log on at 1 a.m. in the morning. Not sure why you want to do that, but might have the policy requirements for contractors or something like that. And you might have a policy that says you don't actually want to move the password hashes up to Office 365. Just going to define a couple of terms that we're going to talk about, just on a high-level infrastructure architecture. So we're going to start on the lower right with the orange boxes, so directory. That's our AD on-prem, or you might have LDAP or something else. That normally is the part that we want to move into Windows Azure Active Directory, so we have all the user accounts in Windows Azure Active Directory. Then from that part on, we can use Shibboleth, SAML, WS Trust, WF Federation to go back to our identity provider, which would then be ADFS or anything else, to authenticate us from there. So that's cool. We have the metadata and the Graph API up here, which we can use to load user accounts into Windows Azure Active Directory or to do stuff against Windows Azure Active Directory if we don't want to use the directory sync. So there are other methods to actually talk to Windows Azure Active Directory. Then we have the authentication mechanism, which means we have a couple of protocols up here that allows for passive and active auth. With passive auth, we have mainly all the web components, so SharePoint Online, Outlook Web Office, what else do you have? The portal itself, and with active auth, we need that for all the Office components. And that's pretty, that's really just a quick overview. So now let's get into the more interesting part. Any questions so far? No, wouldn't think so. All right, first thing, dirsync on a domain controller or in Azure. So dirsync, back in the days, half a year ago, we weren't allowed to install on a domain controller. It actually didn't let you install that, and it would have caused some problems. They updated that, so it's now possible to install dirsync on a domain controller, meaning you don't actually need to have another server stood up. You could just install it on a domain controller. Is that a good idea? Depends on the environment. If we have 20,000 users and just one AD controller, you probably should put another one in there anyways. But it's probably not a good idea to actually add the additional load on the domain controller. So when you install dirsync, you definitely will install SQL, unless you wanted to go for the non-SQL option, but then you have to have another SQL server. So it will install SQL Server Express, puts additional load on there. It's up to you if you want to do that. It's great for small clients. It's great for those 50 user clients that have an SBS server in place, that have a one server in place. They don't want to put another server in place just to run dirsync. So it's great for them. It's suitable for 10,000 users. I think if you have 10,000 users, you probably have more than one server on-prem. So really up to you. There's also the option to put the dirsync server into Azure. And there is a TechNet article up here that you can get later on. It works great. It only means that you have to be able to, or have to have a domain controller of some sorts up in Azure. So you have to have a connection from Azure back to your local on-prem environment. So you can actually synchronize with Azure, with the Azure DC, and then you have the directory sync component in Azure as well. Again, there's a great Technic article that talks about it. Next topic, dirsync high availability. So we can only install dirsync on one server at a time per tenant. We can install multiple dirsync servers in our environment, but we can't configure multiple dirsync servers to connect to the same tenant. So we can't really have a high availability in there. What we can do is we can create a cold standby. And it's really just a workaround and a way to provide that option. A lot of people are asking for it. There's no real version or no real high availability so far, but cold standby is definitely possible. The way how you do it is actually to install dirsync, and instead of using SQL Express, you're using the full version of SQL. So you install, or you need a full SQL server installed. We would then go into the SQL server, we back up the database, we go into the dirsync component, into FIM, and we back up the keys, the registration keys in there, then go into our cold standby server and do replace everything in there and restore everything in there. Got a couple of slides in there as well. So the way how you install it on a full server is you start the installation with dirsync / full SQL, which will install the binaries of the dirsync component. Once you have dirsync installed, you run this command let, which will let you specify what SQL server you want to use. From that point on, dirsync is all fine. If you want to back it up, we shut down the FIM synchronization service first. Then we use SQL Management Studio to back up the database. It needs to be a full backup. Then we use a executable of the FIM service to back up the encryption keys, which we then need to copy to the cold standby server. And then we restart the FIM synchronization service. So the encryption keys and the copy of the encryption keys, that only needs to happen once. Means we do that the first time we do it, and then the other stuff we can write a PowerShell script to do that. Shut down FIM, do a full backup, start FIM, that's all cool. Copy the data over to the cold standby server. If dirsync goes down, we will then go back to the cold standby server, restore the SQL database. The first time we do it, we have to, of course, install it, use the same way how we install the other one. We can activate the keys via the FIM executable up here. Important thing to say that this one here, that needs to be the user that you use to install the directory sync. So when you install directory sync, you need to provide a service account that you then need to use up here as well. What would happen if the original dirsync server comes back up a lot? Probably shouldn't do it. It will create some issues. So make sure you only have one running at the same time. It basically would get confused because suddenly all the delta changes are already up there, and you probably would screw up some stuff. So make sure that if you are going into a cold standby and you start up the cold standby server, that the old dosync server is down, that you won't restart that one, or you actually make it the new cold standby server. Any questions about this? Yes. Can't hear you. Can you log ship database? Yes. What does the database store? Oh, it doesn't store the passwords itself. It would store what it's synchronized into Azure AD. So yes, to some degree, you would have the usernames in there. You would have the password hash in there that it synchronizes up. And you would have all the AD properties and everything in there. When you change something, it would compare what it has in the database to what the new version is, merge them, and then move the deltas up. Pretty much. Even though you can't actually look into it, you can't see a lot in there. Password hash. So Microsoft introduced password synchronization, I think it's about a year ago now. So new feature that lets us take the hash that we have in Active Directory. We will re-encrypt the hash and then move the hash up to Office 365 and allows us to then just use our own password again to log on. Again, it's same sign-on, it's not single sign-on. More prompts. One of the important things is the authentication will happen in Office 365. It's not going to happen on-prem. This single sign-on, we have the redirection of the authentication mechanism down to on-premises, where we authenticate on our ADFS infrastructure against our AD. With same sign-on, we will get authenticated against Office 365. The couple of security questions that always come up. Is the password hash reversible? No. Could I use the password hash itself to log on? So if I go into the database, grab the hash, could I use the hash to log on? No. Doesn't work that way. How is it secured and how is it being sent? So it's all sent over SSL. The password hash, again, we grab the password hash out of AD. We run another, I think it's SHA-256. Yeah, it's SHA-256. Algorithm against it, create another hash, and then the second hash is the hash that we upload to Office 365 over SSL. Cool. Again, there's a TechNet article up there. It talks about it in more details if you're really, really, really interested in it. But I think that's the main thing that you need to know about it. Next feature, password reset and write back. What is it? So it's an option that Microsoft gives us to reset our password. So if we have a user and he logs on into Office 365 and he's federated and he forgot his password or he put his password in too many times and it gets locked out, that will enable us to reset the password. It's not a way to change the password, so it's not a way to just go in and say, I want to change my password, even though you could click on the I forgot my password link. But it's a way to make sure that if you are locked out, you have a way to reset your password. Interesting is it will work with all three identity models. So it works in cloud identities from, that's normal, it's just working straight ahead. It does work with federated users, and it also works with, so it does work with dosync users, and it does work with federated users. And it also looks up the password options that you have set in your Active Directory, and it will honor the settings that you have in your Active Directory. What is it not? As I said, it's not a password change portal. It's really just there to make sure that if you can't log on anymore, you have a way to reset it. Requirements, you have to have at least dosync that version up there. I'm not going to say that out. Single forest AD, you can't do it with a multiple forest environment. You have to have Azure AD Premium, and you have to have Azure AD Premium licenses assigned to the users. You have to have that port open from the dosync server to the Azure IPs. The MSOL account, which is an account that gets created when you install dosync for the first time, that specific account needs to have the ability in AD to reset passwords. So you need to be able to, or you need to go into AD, you need to go into users, direct, users and computers and give that specific account the ability to reset the passwords. You also need to tell your users that they need to put down certain information, so you need to have office numbers, mobile numbers, or an alternate address that we then will use to reset the password. And I'll show you how that looks like later on. But it basically means that we have to have that information in there. We can set it via DoSync. We can set it via PowerShell. We can ask the user to set it himself, so we can ask the user to go to a portal and put that information down by himself if he wants to. And once that's all done, we can just activate it via one PowerShell line, which works fine. Again, there's a technical article describing all that, how to do it in detail. It's not complicated to set up, but the main thing to notice is that you do need to have Azure AD premium licenses to run that. What does it look like for the user? So we log on to Office 365, forgot our password, because we just changed it, or we forgot our anniversary date. We can't access into our account anymore, so we log into our account. It will prompt us, make sure that we actually are a human being, we're not a robot. Go through there, then we have to reset our password, so it will ask us for that information. So it says, do you want me to send an email? Do you want me to send a text? Do you want me to call you? You can set how many of these validations you want to run. So you can set, okay, cool, I only need to have one validation, so I'm only gonna send text, phone call, or whatever. Or I need to have two validations, or even three, so you can set your security mechanism if you want to, and that's a configuration option. That's the second one, so provide a second validation step. And if all goes wrong and I can't actually get that information because my mobile number changed and I haven't updated my information, I have a method in here to contact your administrator. So if you're offsite, you can click on that, and then your admin will get an email about it and say, hey, this user tries to change his password but couldn't get through. Once you validate it, you get this little screen. Tells you to put in your new details, your new password. Then it will go back, it will talk to the DoSync component, and it will reset your password, and you'll be all good to log on. Questions? It's a reset portal, it's not a change portal. So password change means you're on your AD, and you go change your password. So you need to be connected to your actually network. So Microsoft wants to introduce this as well, where you actually say, okay, this is a way to change my password while you're actually connected to your portal. Like you would log into your portal normally, and then you say, I want to change my password now. That's the part that's not included yet. This way is just to reset the password if you forgot it and if you typed it in wrong.
So does this just generate a password and send it to you?
No, you have to put in your password. So you have to, I know it's nearly the same, but it's just the link that's missing is the change my password link that would be up on the top right in the Office 365 portal. That's what's missing. So instead of having that link up there, you now have it in the on the logon page in the beginning. We say, I can't access my password, so I actually need to change it. So you, if you're in the portal, you're already authenticated. You don't have to go through the validation steps. If you go through that, you have to go through the validation steps, if that makes more sense. But you can set your password by yourself. Yes?
What's the mechanism that uses, so you said it works for free and finance models, what's the method it uses to write back with DoSync?
So it goes through the Azure synchronization bus. And the DoSync component through the ports that you need to open has a semi-steady connection to the Azure bus, and it would then create that connection. The DoSync component also synchronizes your password every 2 minutes, so there's a connection every 2 minutes up to Azure. So in those 2 minutes, it would also see that, hey, there's a change that I need to bring back. Anybody else? Too many slides. Cool. What do we do if we have trouble with identity management or with DoSync? Before you implement it, make sure it's healthy. Make sure you actually know what your AD looks like. Make sure you know what your OU structure is like. Make sure you actually have an OU structure. Use the IDFix tool, which you can download from Microsoft. That will just check for duplicate UPNs, duplicate proxy addresses. If you are using any characters in your usernames or in your email addresses that are not allowed, backslash, forward slash, question mark, double at symbol, those kind of things. Make sure you have a sound user provisioning and deprovisioning process. I often see clients that still have user accounts from 10 years ago in the Active Directory, and then that person comes back, gets a new user account, but it has still duplicate attributes, which can create a problem. Also had a couple of clients that would move users frequently between different OUs, but instead of moving them, they would create a new user in the new OU and then just re-enter all the different AD attributes and create duplicates that way. So make sure that you know how you provision your users, you know how to deprovision users, and it's all clean. If you don't use specific OUs, you should filter them. You can do that in DuoSync right now. It's a little bit complicated. In the next couple of versions, it's going to be easier. I'm going to show that later on. But you don't want to use, or you don't want to synchronize service accounts, or you don't want to use synchronize your old user accounts. So just exclude them. And you can exclude them based on OU or based on some attributes. You can check the Windows Event Viewer if you're really desperate. And you can use PowerShell to just dig deeper. Any questions? No? DuoSync, one directory to multiple tenants. So I said before that you can install multiple DuoSync servers in one forest. That's possible. That's not a problem at all. But you can't actually point them to the same tenant. That would create problems. But what you can do is you can point them to different tenants. So if you do that, it will enable you to basically say, cool, I want to have this OU synchronized to tenant A and my student OU synchronized to tenant B. Each of those tenants could then use their own STS or their own identity model. So you could say, cool, if I have a user OU, I'll let them use cloud identity. If I have the teacher OU, I'll get them to use my STS server. And we can all use that on in different ways. So there are people that do it that way. It's possible. It's not really recommended. Microsoft doesn't want you to do that, but it is definitely possible. If you do it, there are ways how you can collaborate. There are ways how you can say, I want to have tenant A talking to tenant B in a certain way. What we won't have is a globalized scale, but what we can do is we can move contacts from the one OU into the other OU, so we would have the contacts of tenant one in tenant two, and vice versa, contacts of tenant two and tenant one. We can share SharePoint sites via external sharing. It means that we can't look up the user when we go into the people picker, and we can say, cool, I want to go John. We actually have to type in John's email address, and we have to share the information via the email address. We can enable free busy federation between the tenants, and that's a PowerShell script. It's actually quite easy. We can have the link presence. Again, that's a PowerShell script, and it's quite easy as well. And if you go down the track and you figure out, hey, I didn't actually want to do that, there's third-party tools to reverse that. Again, it's not recommended to do that. Some people got there for some reason. They acquired a company, and they now have two tenants, and they merged together, but they still have two tenants. It happens out there. Just know that there are ways around it on the limitations, and there are ways to actually merge them together. That's basically what's available in DuoSync right now. So these are all options in DuoSync that we can use right now. So any questions about that before I move into the new stuff? No, very quiet today. Didn't even have the party last night. All right, so Microsoft is developing a couple of new things. So Microsoft is listening to us. We complain. They listen. They try to implement the things that we want. And sometimes it actually works out. So Microsoft came up with Azure AD Sync, which is currently in beta 2. So beta 2 came out a month ago. Before that, it was in CTP. If you want to have the beta, you actually need to go to connect.microsoft.com and sign up for the Connect part. And then you can download the Azure AD Sync tool and look at all the cool new features that there are. What's currently included? So we can choose to reduce the actual AD properties that we want to synchronize up to Office 365. At the moment, we could do that with DirSync, but it's actually going into the firm and actually do some stuff in there. With Azure AD Sync, it's all UI UX-based, so we can go into a GUI and say, I don't want to synchronize the link properties, I don't want to synchronize the SharePoint properties, and I don't want to synchronize the Intune properties. I just untick them, and then it won't synchronize those 150 properties that they are. It will only synchronize the last 50 properties. Makes it a little bit lighter. It does support a couple of multi-forest scenarios that weren't possible before. We have a way to filter the objects via UX now. Again, that was possible via DirSync, but you had to go into the FIM console. Now we can do it via the UI. It allows us to change attribute mappings. So we can say, okay, cool, my UPN, or UPN is probably something stupid, my mail attribute in AD, I actually want to map that to Exchange Attribute 3 when I move it up to Office 365. So when it then would synchronize the user account, it would translate the mail attribute to Exchange Attribute number 2, whatever is in there, and then move that information up to Office 365 instead of taking the original property. Can be useful. Also can change some attributes on the fly. So for example, I can set an attribute during the migration. Again, Exchange attribute number 3, 4, 5, whatever there is. I can set a true parameter in there. I can set anything else in there, which later on I can use then for filtering. Password writeback is currently supported, as we had. Hybrid configuration is currently supported. These two were not supported till the beta 2, so the previous CTS or the previous beta didn't support them. But we still have a couple of things missing. It doesn't do the password sync. And it's not supported for production. So it's poorly there to test around and to have a go at it. If you do have the requirements, especially around multiple forests, then it's a good way to test it and to have a look at it. It's quite interesting. It's quite fun to play around with it. But again, it's not supported by production at the moment. What will come, so they will support production support. And they also want to include support for other directories than AD. So if you have a LDAP V3, if you have a SAML or anything else, they want to include that into the actual DirSync component. What I haven't heard about is if they will include Yammer. So there's a Yammer DirSync tool as well out there, if you know about it. I haven't heard anything about the Yammer DirSync tool yet. Yes, yeah. One important thing about this as well, so the DirSync tool is upgradable, so you can go from version 6.8.8 to version 7.2.1.4. Azure AD Sync at the moment is not upgradable, so if you install that and you want to move from beta 1 to beta 2, you have to uninstall it and reinstall it and then run another full sync. I have a bit of a closer look into the features. We have two screenshots up here, so on the left you can see how you can add multiple forests. As long as the DirSync tool can connect to it, that's fine. Those forests don't need to have a trust or anything, so they can be dispersed forests. They can be trusted forests, or we can have something like account forest and a resource forest. On the synchronization option, I can choose how to map user accounts. So if I have multiple forests, do I want to say, if I have multiple forests and I know that I have UPNs in forest A and forest B that are the same, and I want to use a different attribute that gives me that unique identifier, I can set up what that unique identifier will be. So that way I don't have to merge them. But I also could merge things together if I would want to. That's the user interface to just set which OUs to sync and which ones not. Looks quite nice. Looks a little bit like SharePoint. We then have the user interface on how to map the different attributes. So you can see how we have, what's a good example? The constant account enabled is true, so we could say change that for a specific OU. So we have a specific OU with disabled accounts that while we are transferring them, we can enable them. Can also set different expressions, different directs, and other things, really. Also does support wildcards, if you can see in here. Then this slide is about how you can, that's from beta one. This one lets you see how many different AD attributes are in each location. So if I would look up SharePoint Online as it's selected right now, I can see that there are 65 translations in there, and scoping filters one. So I could basically deselect this one and say I don't want to have these translations or transformations. I don't want to synchronize these attributes. Same for link online user. That was in beta 1. They updated that, and it looked slightly different now. Well, that's beta 2. And this is how it looks like now. So a little bit more friendly. You can say, OK, I want to synchronize the Exchange Online or not, or Dynamic or CRM attributes or not, or Azure RMS or not. So it's totally up to you. And again, it's just making sure that we don't have to sync everything up to Office 365. We only want to have a subset, makes it faster, makes it cleaner. Questions? No. Cool. Next one, multiple AD forests. So we already were able to do that with Forefront Identity Manager. We still are able to do that with FIM. At the moment, it's the only way that's actually supported in production. But with Azure AD services, AD sync services coming in, we now have another tool to do it. The idea is that Azure AD sync services will be a lot easier to actually go through. So we have a nice interface. We don't have the clunky FIM console. It's easier to deal with. It's easier to click through. And it will make our life easier. Again, we have three different kind of forests, as I said already. We have the dispersed forests. They don't have any connectivity. We have a full mesh, which are basically, for example, done via Galsync. So we have information of the ADA or forest A in forest B, and we synchronize that via the Galsync. And we can then apply rules to make sure that if we have a contact from forest B in forest A, and they have the same email address, we can apply rules that say, OK, cool. If they are the same, if there is an account, a contact, and an AD user with the same attribute, the AD user will be the primary one or the more important one. The other way around, if you have an account and resource forest, there are actually ways how you can join them together. So you could look at the master account SID and say, cool, if these two accounts, because that's an exchange, and in my exchange resource forest, and this is in my AD account forest, if they have the same master account ID or whatever, we can join them together, and then it will be one object in Azure AD. Where does that leave the Office 365 connector? It's still there. It will still be out there. You can think it as Azure AD sync is really there for the more easier multi-forests, 2-3 forests that we want to move together. Whereas FIM we will still use for the more complex scenarios. We have 20 different forests. We have acquisitions all over the place. We have AD, we have shiplet, we have SAML implementations, and we all want to move that together. So that's what FIM is still there for, and it will stay in place. Just a comparison between DirSync and Azure AD Sync. So Azure AD Sync, as I said, is still in preview. It's not supported in production yet. It doesn't have all the features, so it's still missing the password sync, which will come. But at some stage, it will replace the DirSync component. It will be the DirSync component. And going forward, that will be the component that we will use. And it's probably another half a year, away. Again, if you want to look at it already, sign up with Connect and have a look at it. It's quite fun to play around with it. And that would be our directory topic. Is there any questions around DirSync or ADFS sync before we go into federation? Oh, are we going for time? Yep, good. All right, move into federation topics. So federation, we have different protocols and authentication types. I want to talk about the authentication types first. So we have passive authentication and we have active authentication. Passive authentication is basically all the web apps that we have in Office 365. They're passive because they don't do anything. You try to log on to SharePoint Online. SharePoint Online will redirect you to some kind of portal. SharePoint Online is then stepping back and say, I've got nothing to do with that anymore. The portal will do everything. They will synchronize, or they will verify my identity. They will make sure that I'm the right person. And SharePoint Online is just waiting for a yes or a no. If the user is authenticated, cool, SharePoint Online lets him in. If the user is not authenticated, then SharePoint Online will not let him in. That's passive authentication. And then there's active authentication. And with active authentication, we have all the Office products, all the Office applications like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, and Link, also the OneDrive for Business application, where you need to type in your username and password in the application itself. And then the application itself tries to figure out if that user is correct or not. So the application itself will try to go to your Federation server, it will go to Office 365, and the application itself will try to get that answer, is that user and username, is the username and the password correct or not. Why is that important? It's important because not all of the Federation protocols actually support both passive and active authentication. So if we have WSP Federation and Trust, which is the one that's used by ADFS, they support both active and passive federation or authentication, whereas Shibboleth only support Shibboleth and SAML, they only support passive authentication. So if we would implement Shibboleth and we would try to sign in with our Outlook client or our OneDrive for Business, we wouldn't be able to authenticate because Shibboleth doesn't support active authentication. Same for SAML, it doesn't support it. With Shibboleth, there is the ECP, which is short for, and I have to look that up every time. I wrote it down. Enhanced Client Process Pack, so you can install that on Shibboleth. And that will actually enable you to do things around the Exchange stack and the Outlook stack to enable Outlook to log on, but only Outlook. So it doesn't work for Word or OneDrive for Business or anything else. There's also Active Directory Authentication Library, also called ADEL. That's used for your Azure Single Sign-On authentication. So it basically enables you to, it's a passive protocol that enables you to use Azure as a single sign-on federation type. Microsoft is working towards updating the Office products to use OAuth and ADEL. Once they updated Office to use OpenOAuth, then they will be able to authenticate against Office 365. And it's all blah, blah, blah. But for us, it means that once they updated Office 365, Office Pro Plus to use OAuth, we will be able to use Shibboleth and SAML and other identity providers in a better way where we can actually use the Office clients to go against the identity federation provider. That's quite a dry topic. I agree. Cool. Synchronization options for SAML or Shibboleth, if you have so. If you still have an AD, there's no reason why you can't use DirSync to move up the identities, so that's still possible. Once it's up there, we can then use SAML or Shibboleth to federate and to confirm all that. If you don't have AD, you can script everything via PowerShell. You could use OpenGraph to put it up there, which is a RESTful interface, or you can do it manually. Again, Azure AD Sync. Microsoft is trying to be able to do sync other directories but Azure, but Active Directory, so they are trying to use LDAP, V3, and other directories that we then be able to move up into Azure. SAML, this again is talking about the active-passive thing. So SAML is passive, meaning we can't actually use the Office clients at the moment. Office client will be updated by the end of 2014, and from that point on, you should be able to do that as well. That's also a good technical article. And then we have two links that will talk about Office 365 with Shibboleth, how to configure it, and Office 365 with SAML. And again, they're quite dry topics, and I didn't want to talk about them. But if you're interested in that, and if you have the requirement to implement that, look up those two technical articles, or those three, actually. Cool. what's new? So with the password sync, again, this has been updated. Half a year ago when we had a ADFS implementation and dosync in place and we would have tickd synchronize my passwords, it would actually drop the passwords during the sync because it saw that the federation option is in place and we actually federate with something else. Microsoft updated the dosync tool, and now if we tick the synchronize my password option while we have a federated environment, it will still synchronize the password, and the password would sit in Office 365 and it would just be there on the password hash. You wouldn't use it, it would just be there. What does that mean for us? It means for us that if our ADFS environment or our identity provider goes down, we now have a fallback option. So if, for whatever reason, ADFS goes down, we can unfederate our Office 365 account, then we have to wait for 2 hours, and then users would be able to log on with their passwords. Microsoft is trying to bring down the time window of 2 hours. They're working on that, but for now it's up to 2 hours. I tested it, and for me it took about half an hour, but that was on a 4-client tenant, so it wasn't really that much. Once ADFS is back up, we can federate our client again. It takes about 5 minutes, and then federation is back up, so the other way around is way faster. Is that actually cool? Would somebody actually use this? Yeah? Good. Then we have the alternate login ID, which is a new feature as well. It basically enables us to use something else but the UPN to log into Office 365. So it's great for people that have a .local at the moment, still have a .local, people have that. It's great for things where the UPN is not supported to whatever degree, so we can say, cool, instead of using the UPN as the authentication login ID, we can actually change it to a mail object or to anything else, really, as long as it is in the format of an email address, michael@hello.com. As long as it is supported by the dosync component, so you can't have @, you can't have \\, those kind of thing. It needs to be in an AD attribute that indexed, so I can't just create my own one. So dosync needs to be able to index that and synchronize it up. And the if you want to create your own one, like the exchange extension attributes are perfect for that. And it also needs to be single value, so I wouldn't be able to point it to the proxy addresses AD attribute because there are multiple values in there, so it needs to be a single value. It's actually all up here. Also only works with ADFS3, so you need to have 2012 R2 plus the latest update. If you don't have the latest update, that's the KP article that you need, and that's the PowerShell script to actually enable it. The more detailed way to do it is up here, and I think I have a few more slides on that as well. Maybe not. No, I don't. Multi-factor authentication with Office 365. Again, that's something new in the Azure portal that Microsoft enables us. So if you go back to the way how we enabled the password sync, you would remember that users would type in their email address, their office phone number, and their mobile address, and then if they forgot their password, they have to authenticate themselves, they have to validate themselves that they are who they claim they are, and then they get resetted. Now, we can use that mechanism to use it while they actually log in. So we can set that up in the portal. You would see it in here. There's a new option down here where you can set up multi-factor authentication. You click on it. You can enforce it for all of the people, basically. You then need to set that information. Again, you can use PowerShell. You can use just dosync and make sure those AD attributes are to somehow populated. Or you get the user to go into the user profile and update themselves. And what's happening then is if they would sign in, whenever they sign in, they would get another way to authenticate. So in this case, that person, I think, had a text or a call. Yeah, they're calling his phone. So again, if you want to have multi-factor authentication, but you don't want to implement anything on-prem, you want to have it in Azure, that's great. Cool way to do it. Now, we talked about the active and the passive authentication. So this is great if we have it enabled, but we still have the applications on-prem, which would use active authentication. So this wouldn't work for them. So what you need to do if you use this is you need to create a application password. So you would go into your portal, and for each application that you want to use that is going to authenticate against Office 365, you would create a separate authentication password that is only valid for that application. So you create the password, and then when you sign into the application, so you open up Outlook and it asks you for username and password, you actually would supply the application password instead of your normal password. Microsoft, again, working on that. Next version of Office Pro Plus will change that. So next version of Office Pro Plus, because it will use OAuth, will be able to just use the normal multi-factor authentication as well, and it will redirect to a web page that will then prompt you. Troubleshooting. ADFS is complex. Look into it if you want to. I'm going to go into much detail there. But ADFS has a lot of options, especially with 3. We can now join our non-domain joined devices via device join. We can do different things in ADFS that we don't really need for Office 365, but it's hugely complex, and you don't really need to implement everything just for Office 365. So make sure you don't overcomplicate it. Make sure you just deploy the things that you actually need. That's us for the Federation topic. Any questions? Yes. So it depends what your shibboleth environment looks like. So if you have an AD environment and you're using shibboleth on that AD environment, you can use DirSync to move over the AD part for the users and then use shibboleth STSTS. Yes, that's possible.
So we're all broken through the
shibboleth directory? So the DirSync component, that directory, is via Azure AD Sync, and then shibboleth is basically just the way how you authenticate. Yeah, so the DirSync is the directory part, and then shibboleth is the way how you authenticate and how you make sure that you can log on, so you can do that. If you have the requirement where you say, okay, I need to have some users authenticate via shibboleth and some users authenticate via ADFS, what... I see. Okay, cool. So you have multiple directories. Yes, so you can do that. Yes, you can move multiple directories into one directory. That's Azure AD Sync. So that's one of the new features. You need to make sure that when you actually merge them together, you have a way to troubleshoot if you have users that are the same name or that have the same master account. I didn't know there's somebody with shibboleth in New Zealand. That's fine. Coming back to the STS, there's actually a identity program from Microsoft that is certifying all the different STSs out there. These are the ones that are currently certified, so these people went through the process of being certified as an STS. So these are your alternatives for ADFS. Some of them are already in use, some of them aren't. Good to know about them. It's good to know the program if you have a customer that is actually having another STS and they're wondering if they can use it or not. So be aware of that and look it up, basically. And that, I think, was my last slide. I got 5 minutes left. Questions? Nobody? Really? Was it that dry? Oh my God. Can you repeat the question? With high availability in terms of ADFS or in terms of DirSync? Yep. So there's no way to make it high available in terms of having to do a sync service running at the same time and making sure they are running at the same time and synchronizing to the 1 tenant and it's not supported. You can only have one do a sync server that's synchronizing to 1 tenant. So you have the, when you do it, I think it's better if you come up and we talk about it, but there's no way that you can synchronize two dosing servers to one tenant. It's not supported. So you have to go the cold standby way at the moment. But I'm happy to talk about it again. All right, cool. Thank you, guys.